Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Shamita Basu, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. It's good to have you with us on Memorial Day. We have one more conversation for you. Since the pandemic began, the volume of obituaries and paid death notices in our newspapers have become a powerful reminder of the loss we're all experiencing right now. And in the absence of traditional mourning rituals like funerals, the obituary pages are becoming a communal space for us to grieve together in this moment. For more on what obituaries mean during this pandemic, I spoke with Maureen O'Donnell, the obituary writer for the Chicago Sun-Times and a former president of the Society of Professional Obituary Writers, and John Pope, a contributing writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, and the author of the book Getting Off at Elysian Fields, Obituaries from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. John's been writing obituaries for decades now, and he's developed a pretty good sense for what makes a good obituary. Here's what he's always looking for.
Something that punches my quirky buttons. Something that makes me think, wow, this is something people would like to know about. For instance, there was a dear friend of mine who was the city's chief administrative officer. Her father had died. He was a letter carrier. Everyone loved him. And we chatted about that for a while. I said, okay, Brenda, what else you got? She said, well, Pope, in World War II, he was a spy. And I said, cool. He was one of the few African-Americans in counterintelligence. He was assigned to pubs along the English Channel, probably where black GIs went to see if word of D-Day might be leaking out. And he was one of the first guards in a presidential security detail. Now, that's a cool story.
John's talked about finding the rosebud moment. You know, the reference to Citizen Kane, you're finding out what makes somebody tick. And one of my favorite obituaries was about kind of a typical Chicago area resident named Jim Cole. He grew up in a well-to-do suburb, but became fascinated by bears at a young age. And he wound up moving to the American West, and he became a wildlife photographer specializing in grizzly bears. In the course of my research, which was spurred just by a classified death notice mentioning his love of grizzly bears. In the course of my research, I wound up talking to a gentleman. I think his title was director of bear management at one of our national parks. And it turned out Jim Cole was the only known person in North America to have survived not one, but two attacks by grizzly bears, because in his photography, he got a little too close to some mama bears.
What are the components of an obituary? What are the parts that you're definitely looking for?
You're always finding out, you know, who they are, occupation, survivors, where they died, when they died, and where they were born. I like to ask questions that elicit more than a yes or no answer. You don't want to say, you know, did your mother enjoy cooking or did your mother enjoy dancing? I want to know, what kind of a car did she drive? Did she like dogs? Oh, what kind of dog? Oh, she had 8 boxers in her lifetime. And what TV shows did she like? How about if I walked into her house, what's the first thing I'd notice? So I'm asking specific questions to make that person come alive again.
I like to take my cue from a question on the first night of Passover. It's a variant on the question, how is this night different from all other nights? My question is, how is this person or how is this story different from all other stories?
And you know, there's a saying, the specific is universal. Great Indian film director Meera Nair, I think, said that. And Roger Ebert, our film critic, used to quote her. The more specific you find out about the person, the more universal that story is. You know, whether you're writing about a Japanese American who settled in Chicago after getting out of an internment camp, or an Irish immigrant, or an African-American who came north in the Great Migration, or someone who fled the Middle East after conflict. Yes, those are specific stories, but they're universal too. It's every grandparent's or great-grandparent's story.
So since you're both professional obituary writers and thinkers, I hear what you're saying, that you're often looking for kind of a quirky or interesting detail when you're deciding who to write about. But what about during a crisis like the one we're currently going through? How do you decide who gets an obituary in this moment and who doesn't?
We pitch stories, but it's up to the editor to say yay or nay. And it's not as simple as saying, oh, someone died, let's do an obit. No, no. This crisis is happening at a point when the print industry is already an economic crisis. And with the COVID-19 epidemic, the number of ads has shrunk, which means the number of pages and news hole have shrunk. But it has to be someone who has not only succumbed to coronavirus, but also someone who was somehow noteworthy. For instance, one of the people I wrote about here was an OBGYN who delivered more than 3,000 babies during his career. Another one opened up the U.S. trade with China after 30 years. And most recently, there was a community college administrator who died of the virus, and she was a saint. She helped kids buy textbooks. She gave them transit passes when they didn't have money. That obit has gotten more feedback on Facebook and on our newspaper's website than any other obit I've ever written. Thousands of people. And it reminded me of what, again, other cinematic reference, what Clarence the Angel said to George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. One person's life touches many others.
Maureen, what about for you? Who are some of the people that you've been writing obituaries for during this time?
One thing that I like to do, and I think it's a service to our readers, is to write about a variety of people, different ethnicities, different professions, different generations, different genders, people who've seen life's rich pageant, whether it was surviving the Spanish flu epidemic or liberating a concentration camp in World War II or inventing a chocolate chip cookie recipe. I've often said that I think obituary writers are frustrated history teachers. You know, we're trying to share different stories with our readers. And some of the coronavirus obituaries I've done, one, of course, you couldn't ignore. It was John Prine, you know, one of the most beloved troubadours in America. He was admired by everyone from Bob Dylan to the Black Keys to Casey Musgraves to Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, and started out as a postman in Maywood, Illinois, right outside of Chicago. John Prine used to start composing his lyrics in his head while he was walking, delivering mail. I also wrote about a woman, Amelia Pontarelli. She helped operate Tony's Italian Deli in Chicago, and she fed thousands of people with her ready-made meals and lasagna. This was a woman who survived the Nazis coming to her mountaintop town in Italy at 12 or 14 years old. Her father had to drag her away from the Nazis because she was raining verbal abuse on them when they stole her pet goat for lunch. She immigrated, started a new life in America, worked at the family business, and COVID took her.
Now, you've both mentioned such specific and human and lovely details about some of the people that you've written about. Can you tell us how you find out these really specific details when you want to write an obituary? And I imagine, I wonder whether that process is different in the obituaries you're writing right now for people who are dying at this moment, especially non-celebrities.
We're reporters, and we just have to find out something that will give us more than what I call a resume obit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my friend Molly Ivan said that's about as dull as bus station chili. I'm doing an obit today on the founder of the New Orleans Film Festival. A friend said, whenever I walked into a movie, if he was standing in the lobby, he'd talk about the movie, and that would be better than the film I was seeing. Just little details that make the person stand out. It's all about the details.
Yes, and that's a hardy perennial. You do that whether it's the year 2000 or the year 2020. When I'm writing about somebody like John Prine, who's so well known, I'm looking for the Chicago stories from his origins that people may not know.
And you always look for the greater context. Mm. Here we have food. Two of my favorite obits are food obits. Ella Brennan, who is the matriarch of the family that runs Commander's Palace and other restaurants, and Leah Chase, the queen of Creole cuisine who fed the civil rights movement. So you put Miss Leah, who died last year at the age of 96, against this background of the civil rights movement. She fed the civil rights movement. James Baldwin loved her gumbo, and it turns into a pretty rich story.
You know, on this show a few weeks ago, we talked about funerals right now and how, of course, the pandemic has really complicated our ability to mourn collectively. Have you been thinking about the function of the obituary pages in this moment and how they're possibly filling that gap?
It definitely is, because there's no other way to do it publicly. Mm-hmm. Ellis Marsalis, who was a major New Orleans musician who lived in my neighborhood, deserved a second line. Brass band with people following with umbrellas and hankies, celebrating his life.
That's a true New Orleans funeral, right?
Yeah, I notice when I see page after page after page of death notices, there are, it's grieving. If I may make one point here that I was thinking of when Maureen was telling her wonderful stories, what we're doing here is what Margalit Fox, in a documentary called Obit, said that an obituary is only tangentially about death. What you're doing in an obituary is recalling and perhaps celebrating the person's life.
These are sort of the way we're communally grieving now. Yes, funeral homes are live streaming wakes and live streaming graveside services, but I think the death notices that I'm seeing in the Chicago Sun-Times are expanding. I think that the family, friends, and funeral homes are putting in so many more details as a way to sort of be a community support group. I mentioned to someone this week that I was reading a death notice about a woman who loved cats. And yes, you know, in the past I might see she loved her cat Binky. But in this death notice, they mentioned every cat the individual had ever owned. And it was so endearing to me to read about Binky, Storm, Ginger, Aoife, Midnight, Princess. That was probably every cat this person owned from when they were 16 to when they were 86. And before the coronavirus pandemic, I'm not so sure people would have put in every cat, you know. But I think it's something we need to do to connect and celebrate each other.
Well, it makes me think of what Linda Lohman said near the end of Death of a Salesman: attention must be paid.
Yes.
And then also, Marshall McLuhan, when I was in college back ages ago, said that seeing a story about an event you attended means that event mattered. Same with an obit or a death notice. It means that this person mattered in the overall scheme of things.
You've been writing obits for decades now. I wonder how what you're doing right now compares to the process you went through writing obituaries during other crises. Like during Hurricane Katrina, for example, I know you're in New Orleans, or the AIDS crisis.
Well, first of all, a story is a story. And we report the story, whatever the occasion might be. AIDS is more appropriate because I started writing obituaries in the early days of AIDS, back when nobody really knew what caused it and everybody was terrified. I don't think we should attach a whole lot of what I call woo-woo to COVID obits. I mean, they are news stories. Yes, the occasion is sad, but we report it the same way we report any other obituary at any other time. Go after the facts, see where they lead you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you've actually written your own obituary, right?
Twice.
What were both of those processes like?
Why did you write it twice, first of all?
You're an editor, John.
Well, there was so much more to put in. No, in 2001, I was a medical reporter. When I had a Centers for Disease Control fellowship, I thought, no telling where I'll wind up, so I'll have an obit ready. Uh-huh. Well, I survived. And in 2015, I was going on a safari to Kenya and Tanzania. I thought, better update that obit, Pope.
Wow. I mean, how did it feel to sort of steel yourself for writing something that would be read by others about you after your death?
Who better to write it? Also, I mean, I wrote my wife's obituary the day she died, because I knew her better than anyone else. I didn't want any lesser hands to touch it.
As obituary writers, you are very used to confronting death and dying. What have you learned from thinking about death and loss that could be helpful for listeners to hear right now?
Don't put off till tomorrow what you should be doing today. I've written, and John will probably agree with me, I've written so many obituaries where somebody retired on a Friday and they died suddenly the following Tuesday. And the relative said to me, he always wanted to go on a safari. He always wanted to see the Great Barrier Reef. He always dreamed of seeing Venice. And that has definitely impacted my life.
I turned 70 a year and a half ago. My motto became, if not now, when? And just do it. I want to go to Rwanda to see the gorillas. I want to go to India. I went to Antarctica in January. Again, I wanted to go. And Maureen is absolutely right. And you also learn kindness and patience. Never argue with the family of the deceased. Never. Yes, you write the story, but they can decide whether they want to talk to you because you don't have a subpoena. Eventually, they'll come around to your point of view. My mother quoted scripture a lot. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So you don't want to alienate the people you need to talk to.
I have one other thought about lessons I've learned from writing obituaries. I'm a child of Irish immigrants, and I frequently have gone to the Irish American Heritage Center here in Chicago for dances, for Irish fests, for St. Patrick's Day. And for more than 20 years, you know, I would watch the Cayley dancers doing traditional Irish dances with fabulous names like the Siege of Venice, dances named after old wars and battles. And in the middle of all these Irish Americans and Irish immigrants doing the dances was an African American man. And he was very serious and he was very good at these dances. And I always meant to introduce myself to him to find out his story. Well, I didn't. You know, the years go by, you're busy. I'll see him at the next festival. Well, he died a couple of years ago, and I decided to look into his life, and it was fascinating. His name was Alan Beale. I think he was a physicist. He had a scientific background, and he was fascinated by the patterns of these dances, which are kind of like square dancing, you know, precursors to square dancing. And he not only became adept at these dances, he knew more of these dances than I will ever know. And he knew their origins from the 1500s, 1600s. And he became this beloved Cayley dancer who would go all over the Midwest with other dancers to perform and enjoy these old airs, as the Irish call it. And I wrote a little story, and most of the time we try to keep ourselves out of obituaries, John, right? But this time I put myself in there and I said, please don't wait till tomorrow to introduce yourself to a person, to reconnect with an old high school friend, to right a wrong, to say you're sorry. You know, do it now, because Alan passed away very young.
I saw my high school physics teacher in a checkout line years ago with his mother. I should have gone up and said, Mr. Meyer, I'm John Pope. I just want to tell you how much you meant to me and how much you've shaped my thinking. I didn't.
John Pope is a contributing writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, and Maureen O'Donnell is the obituary writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. So fascinating. So great to talk to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for being with us on this Memorial Day. You can call us anytime at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway with any of your thoughts. You can also tweet at me if you'd like. I'm at ShuBasu. That's ShuBasu. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Shamita Basu, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Talk to you tomorrow.